Our talk this evening will be given by Boundless Way Zen Senior Dharma Teacher Mike Filicki.
Eventually. Okay, here we are in year 6,000 of our coming and going retreat, Sesshin. Feeling deep into it already. And so grateful and appreciative, so happy to be here and grateful to everyone keeping it going. Keeping this little fire burning for those of us who come and go. So the reading tonight, self and other the same, begins with a sentence that almost makes me laugh because it's so perfect. All dharmas are innately amazing beyond description. And this is a piece that invites us to encounter our lives just as they are, without strategies. There are so many parts of ourselves that we might rather not encounter. So many aspects of life that we might imagine if they just would go away, we would be okay. So many gains and losses we experience. And I don't know about the rest of you, but for me, the losses have, in so many times, a kind of sticking power. They set up certain kinds of grooves in the brain, mental habits. I find myself, personally, each one of us has a different sort of, shall we call it, demon that we cozy up with, I suppose. I find myself drawn down certain mind roads. The demon of sadness merely looks and beckons with a single finger. And I take many steps toward him, her. And find myself walking down the mind road of all kinds of stories about my life. So we have a question here. What is this practice about? When whoever your demon might be shows up and beckons with its own kind of gravitational pull. They are kind of sticky, Velcro beings, demon Velcro beings. Vividly hopping along demon Velcro bunnies. And we do stick to them. I know I do. So what is this practice about? We are told that the initial teachings, the Four Noble Truths, is that we will suffer to some extent, inevitably. This is part of life. And that there is some kind of relief that is available to us when we engage wholeheartedly in a life of practice. But so many of us have found that this relief is not what we expect. It doesn't turn out to be a life of pure bliss. bliss beings, it turns out to be something different. Many of us, this will cause us to pull out our GPS devices, try to locate where we are on the road to enlightenment, and as quickly as possible, find the next turn, the shortcut, find the better way. We practice stratagems. We look for alternatives. And in this looking, as we drive along the road, running over all kinds of creatures in our path, looking at our GPS device, we do miss what's right in front of us, the openness of the road itself. We have an opportunity here in this period of intensification of our practice to begin to let go of our strategies, to put down the GPS, to let go of the maps that we think tell us what we need to do. To get somewhere, anywhere else. Because this practice doesn't require that of us. And at some point, we may be lucky and realize that actually that's quite a relief. That when our personal demon comes and beckons, that we can just see. We can just see the finger wagging. That's enough. There are some lines in this particular piece that for me are so wonderful. Because this piece begins to, for me, really illuminate the salvific power of non-duality. The quality of our lives just present, just as they are. The distant, faint ticking of a clock. The breath of people near us, our own breath, so intimate, everything so intimate, everything just as it is right here, shining brightly for us. The little tender hooks of our hearts flashing, words passing through our minds, exactly thus. The great long tongue of the Buddha dancing before us always, nowhere for us to go. Nothing we need to accomplish at all. Thank you.
So please make yourselves comfortable in one of our Dharma dialogue.
Thank you, Mike. Seems that this theme of nothing to accomplish, you know, is really weaving its way through all of the talks and the Dharma dialogues, and your talk really brought us back to that center again, you know, that keep being pulled toward, and this image of the long tongue of the Buddha, you know, yeah, that and the Velcro demons. You know? some of those Tibetan deities, you know, that look like demons, right? You know, with their long tongues. So now they have Velcro on them in my mind.
All wrapped up.
And you know, how they too, you know, these Velcro demons, I think that you just really brought out that nothing we need to do with them. You know, they too are, right, the protector deities in some mysterious way that we can't know with our discriminating mind. You know, everything is appearing in a way that maybe is just right. So thank you very much.
Thank you for saying it better than I did.
Different.
Well, I like, even though they're appearing and are part of it all, we don't have to go chasing down the perpetual mind road.
You have your image of them beckoning, you know, with their fingers. Yeah, that's what it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it is a kind of, I really do experience it as a kind of gravitational pull, or a kind of slipping just right into that these patterns again and again. I really do like this idea that, you know, it's not about running away from these patterns either. Nothing actually required but to see this is what's happening. You know, but sometimes there can be a place for me with that too, where I say, oh no, that can't be right, because, you know, seeing this is really hard. And sometimes it is hard. But I guess what? We practice and practice and practice, and eventually do sense that seeing it is enough, that it doesn't quite fully control in the same way.
I have an image of the long tongue of the Buddha as like a slippy slide, and these Velcro demons are taking us down the slippy slide. But there's a moment when we go, "Zoop! Oh, right! I'm in the hands of the demons." I think that is that what you're pointing to. Yeah, and so you might go right off the deep end, but you saw that you were going off the deep end, which is really different than what used to happen, which was just blunk off the deep end. And where's my next demon?
Running for the next demon.
So, Mike, I was intrigued by your talk of sadness. Just from my perspective, it's not sadness, but it's falling into or feeling swamped with regret, or and sometimes it's falling into, like, you know, really good thoughts. Like, wow, you know, so insightful. You know, so sometimes it's, you know, associated with the negative, but then sometimes it's associated with, wow, this is great. And, you know, ride this one for a while. I was just wondering if you could talk about... When you're in those times of sadness, I mean, how is that in your sitting? Like, is it, you know, I guess, how is that for you?
Well, thanks for that question. So, I don't think there's any one way that it is. And one of the things that I appreciate about this particular sutra so much is the opening line about how so much is beyond words. And I do find that as I pin things down into particular boxes and categories, that I carry them more heavily. I would say that. That there's a quality of the Velcro being my own categories, my own maps, my own thinking about these things. And doing so in a way that isn't aware that that is what is happening would be another part of the sticky quality. And I think that for me, I've been actually playing with question marks. What is this type of question marks? So the moment that I think I know what it is, I often find myself not even necessarily very explicitly, but just kind of saying, is it? And looking again. And I think that it's just that attention, right? That attention where things come to life in a way where they were dead before. They were inert somehow. They felt heavy burdens I was carrying on my back, these concepts I'm walking around with. And then looking closely again and seeing the liveliness of it, that it's not what I thought it was. It's often in those moments when I see the aliveness of it that things go from feeling kind of frozen in some way to maybe I cry or just kind of open up or even feel like I can tell somebody about this now or it just starts to shift and move. It reminds me of the last line of this where it says, when you face what you have excluded and see how it appears. That I love that part right there. And for me, the way that I exclude is actually to conceptualize in a fixed box. That's how I exclude things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just to point out that, you know, everybody has their own demons. Mm-hmm. So it's wonderful to be interested in other people's demons. Sheds light on our own, doesn't it? Yeah, because I'm not trapped in that particular one, but I have my own.
I actually find hearing about other people's demons to be quite liberating because I look at it and I say, "Well, that's a dumb demon." You know?
I wish I had that demon.
Yeah,
I could deal with that one. It's not nearly as bad as mine.
You call that something. I also like the line in Mary Oliver's poem, Wild Geese, where she says, tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. And then, meanwhile, the world goes on. Like, it's not just about the demons.
Right.
You know, there's more to life than these Velcro figures.
And I appreciate you saying this quality that we get engaged in an experience and we're not conscious of constructing it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we're doing the thing, but we're not conscious we're doing the thing because it's just true.
Yeah.
And you don't even say it's true because it's so obviously true. You can't even consider that it's not true. And so that moment where we begin to see the construction, see, oh, I am doing. You know, and even that doesn't always mean we can stop doing. Mm-hmm. You know, we can still be stuck. Mm-hmm. But the shift when we realize, oh, that there's just a tiny bit more space around it when we realize that. So, yeah.
Thank you, Mark. I loved what you were saying about. How maybe seeing is enough. You know, we fall into these patterns. We probably each, you know, have our own unique pattern, as you were saying, but nonetheless we keep falling into the same thing over and over again. And how you said, you know, that it may take us a long time to really see that, you know, just seeing is enough, because it's you know, we dare to look, to sit still and pay attention to these things that we really don't like, you know, the things that we most want to avoid. And for me, anyway, is what shows up when I'm sitting, you know, and here we are daring to look. And it's so disturbing, or at least it can be so disturbing to see ourselves falling into these patterns, you know, that we most desperately want to escape from, that it seems like I would be better off not looking at this, you know, and that's the habit of my lifetime, is not wanting to look at this particular thing, you know. And it takes a lot of practice, I think, at least it has for me, to start to convince myself that just seeing this over and over again, this same pattern, just watching the beckoning finger and watching myself, you know, head off towards it, right? Not that I can stop, but just, you know, I start to see that this happens over and over again. And what a wonderful bit of information that is, you know, rather than just avoiding it, but to say, oh, so this is what's happening here. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
What's so surprising to me is how much tenderness I'm finding in making space for what I used to exclude, like my pain, like my, you know, we're going to get up and we're going to do this and all this. And I realized how much that was excluding in a way I didn't see before. And what I'm seeing is how much more space there is just by that being with it, and how much harshness there is in that exclusion. And and I'm most surprised by the space of just making space for this, even though I don't think I can stand it. And then something opens. It's kind of shocking to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's so well said. Me too. So many times that I have an idea of what it is that I will encounter if I really let this one in.
Yeah.
And never what it actually is.
And I like the idea too, Steve was referring to this a little bit, but that to do anything is wrong. Turning away and touching are both wrong. And we think, okay, I've got a great strategy for this little Velcro being. I will. And you know you're wrong.
Right.
But it's so tempting because we have such strong opinion about this. But this power and the courage and the tenderness to see and not to meddle. Quite a thing.
There's something that you said too about how it's never the way you imagine it, the outcome. Mm. And I think that's another Velcro demon, that we have, the demon of prediction. I know what's going to happen when this. Mm-hmm. And we're so convinced, but the only data that we have to predict that is what's happened in the past. Mm. And we think that's going to predict the future. Mm-hmm. And as I love that you use the word never, because mm-hmm. I always catch it, well, it rarely, but I think you're right. and there's a line, I try to be, you know, gentle. And think, well, maybe that'll happen. Mm-hmm. But inside I'm thinking, that's not going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen. But there's that line, you know, Zen students don't know the truth, they only know their experience up until now.
Yeah.
That's really the truth. And if we live in that way, we're constantly amazed and surprised. And it goes back to that first line again. You know, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Doesn't it say it's amazing? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. Amazingly wonderful. It's amazingly wonderful. Even, it's not just wonderful. When we teach in Europe, they say, Americans say amazing and wonderful too much. But it is. It's amazingly wonderful.
Derek had something.
I just want to say how, it's amazing how strong of an emotion I can have, and then the other week I was, it's just time for bed, so I was just going to bed, and I thought, well, maybe I'll do better in the morning. And maybe like 5 minutes later, that emotion had completely slipped my mind. And I came back to remembering how strongly I felt. And it was like, unbelievable that it had just, slipped my mind. Like, it just... and then I started like noticing the whispers of the mind, like, oh, why I should be feeling that way.
Yeah. There's that finger beckoning.
Little bunny.
Bunny slipped into the underbrush. Trust me, or something.
But I think it takes a lot of attention to actually notice the coming and going.
Right. Yeah.
Because it's so convincing, it has been this way, I have been this way forever and ever, and I always will, because it's just the way things are. And we run it up the flagpole, and we salute and march around. But if we look more closely, it's just not solid. It comes and goes. It appears and disappears.
Also our memories of these things are completely distorted. And this is related to brain physiology. The part of the brain that makes memories is adjacent to the part of the brain that panics. they're like right next to each other. So it's really hard to remember exceptions to terrible things. So when we're making predictions, we can't really draw on the full range of memory. We draw on the range of a very limited range,
which is associated with panic more.
Yeah, and you think about it, it's survival. It's how our ancestors survived circumstances that were dangerous, but it's kind of outmoded in some way. We still need it. We don't want to dismantle it. But I always thought that was an amazing thing.
So when in doubt, panic.
Well, that's what the brain says. Yeah, you're not sure? Hey, this must be
much bigger.
And then it also explains what Derek was talking about. When it slips away, that part of the brain says, wait a minute, no, don't do that so fast. There might still be danger around. So we go right back. Sticky.
I'm not exactly sure how to say this, but I've started to say it and stopped it myself a couple times because I'm kind of confused, so maybe somebody can help me figure it out. I have this kind of Velcro on top of Velcro image. So I usually identify with a lot of what you were saying tonight, Mike, and it's very helpful. Recognizing your own demons and the ways that we approach them and don't approach them. But what kept coming to my mind as you were talking was the way, I think this referred to something you read early on, but it's all a jumble in my mind right now, about the duality, the separating yourself from others. Because for me, the Velcro on top of the Velcro is that all of these sort of individual lures, seductions, and sometimes they're very seductive. I know where that, not only I see that that's my demon, but I know where that comes from, and I know what about my history specifically makes that so sticky for me, and that separates me from everybody else. I'm better, I'm worse, I'm more impaired, I'm clever at seeing how much more impaired I am, etc. But it does happen no matter what it is, whether I see it or it takes a long time to see it or I see how to resist it. It often plays that secondary function still of separating me from everybody else. Like, this is not what everybody else goes through or how they go through it, whether it's good or bad. And that, I find, for me, is even the larger, the bigger piece of Velcro, because it kind of attaches all these little ones to it and says, all these different things just prove how you're not really... Your mind doesn't work like others, your history is not like others, etc. And how to... I guess that, for me, maybe that's the biggest Velcro piece, or it's a big one. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to work with that one.
So I had a conversation with someone once about this, a topic very similar to this. It was Josh. And the response he gave me was, duality doesn't hinder non-duality. I loved it. It was such a powerful Dharma gate that whatever is happening is exactly thus.
And I love how seeing how...
don't think on it too much. Yeah.
I love how seeing, and going back to what Aaron said in the beginning, how these things can work plus and minus. How we can separate ourselves because we're just a little bit better. Not a lot, of course, you know, but just slightly more insightful than the average bear, you know. Or we can get lost in these, you know, fantasies of good thoughts or something. So nice to see that. And how it is the arising of the delusion of separateness. You know, this primal delusion of subject and object. And in this reading, he talks about when self and other are the same, mind and dharmas are one. You know, so really examining the arising of the perception of separation and looking more closely into that, that we can see it's not what it appears to be.
And that really is, you know, one of the basic teachings of the Buddha, to see through the nature of the self. And just when you were describing it, so many parts of that description were I, me, mine, I, me, mine, I, me, mine. And this is duality, right? This is the way we make a self and other. So the title of this is Self and Other the Same, which doesn't make sense. But what Mike quoted Josh is saying is that it doesn't matter if we don't understand it, essentially, because non-duality is just present. And it's not hindered by anything. So even the idea that I'm this little self who's divided from everybody else, it's not a problem. That's part of the whole thing too. Isn't that amazing? It's amazingly wonderful. Yeah. So in a sense, we all get off the hook. You know, this is one of the themes, as Diane was pointing out earlier, of the whole coming going sashin, that this wholeness that is already who we are. And when we try to divide, that's when we hurt ourselves. Whether it's, you know, I've got the best thoughts ever, or I'm the worst person ever. That's the division.
For me, this question, it's really helpful for me to think about perspective. And so when you're living your life, looking through your eyes, your Velcro separates you from other people. And the concept of God, I like to use the word God, I know not everybody here does, I'm sure, but helps me to think, like, in the eyes of God, it's all Velcro, or it's no Velcro, take your pick. And that's something I felt I understood growing up in a Christian tradition, but then when I came here, I started to feel like I was God. And you are God too, and all these people are God. And that was the ultimate perspective shift of, like, that it's all Velcro, or that it's no Velcro, that it's all God, or there's no God, or that boundless, shapeless field of it. But it takes cultivation to have that perspective, because for most of the day, just looking out these eyes, not the eyes of God, but sometimes I just think, you're God, you know, that perspective shift can be really powerful and get rid of those divisions.
Thank you, Kate. Yeah. That's beautifully said. So let's sit for another few moments. And...